Hadn't both Rial and Avalier just told her that others had been similarly afflicted, and that in those instances the affliction had passed with no serious ramifications? Caddybri winced. Had Avalier just lied to her? She focused her mind, determined to remember more, or at least to put some of the flitting memories floating through her thoughts into some sort of context and order. She looked to the door again, then to a small, decorative plant set in the corner of the room. Her gaze went back to the door as she chewed anew on her lip. Dare she? Caution bade her not to do it. The projection of Rukia bade her not to do it. But the wisdom of Caddybri nagged at her, told her that something was truly amiss. She went to the plant and dragged it across to the opposite wall, out of sight of the door, which opened into the room and would shield anyone entering from that particular corner for a moment at least. She glanced around again. In all of her years here, she had never attempted anything this dangerous. But she needed to know. She began to whisper a long and solemn spell from inside the coven in the floating city of Shade Enclave. She called to Mialiki. She asked for guidance, asked for some divine intervention to clear the confusion in her mind. The unicorn-shaped spell scar began to glow, a bluish light wafted over her forearm like the mist enveloping a mountain stream on a cold autumn morning. She found no answer immediately, but the notion of a simpler spell came to her. She cast a spell to dispel magic, first as a divine spell, then again in the arcane school of magic. She cast it upon herself repeatedly, and more assuredly each time as she came to recognize that yes, indeed, the fog in her mind was magically inspired. That twisting fog began to clear just a bit, but that one piece of the puzzle, a memory of Lady Avalier out in the desert, at her secret garden, was all that Caddybri needed in order to piece the rest of the damaging story together. Avalier knew. She knew all of it. Caddybri's breath came in short gasps as she tried to sort out her last conversation with the woman in light of this new realization. She had told Avalier of her previous life. What did that mean for her plans? What did that mean for Drizzt and the others? She couldn't focus on that, however, as other issues pressed in on her. Lady Avalier's parting words spun over and over in her thoughts. Then she unwound it and looked at the door with her mouth hanging open as Lady Avalier's last promise echoed in her thoughts. Her heart beat faster as she replayed those words. Caddybri had been with Niraj and Kavita immediately preceding her encounter with Lady Avalier in her secret garden. The timeline of Avalier's explanation of Caddybri's affliction didn't work. If Caddybri ever again spoke with her parents, she would discern that lie. Oh, no, Caddybri mouthed. Lady Avalier would surely go to Niraj and Kavita, not to comfort them, but to make sure that Caddybri never again had the opportunity to speak with her parents. Oh, no, the woman whispered, breathing hard. She felt moisture gathering in her eyes. She thought of Drizzt and the clear risk to her mission. She thought of her duty. But she thought of her duty to her parents, too, to Niraj and Kavita, who had shown her nothing but love and kindness. She had to leave, she knew, then and there. "Forgive me, Mialiki," she whispered, crying openly now. For she knew what she must do.
"What is she doing?" Lady Avalier asked Rial, who stood beside her on the high balcony, huddled under a blanket against the driving rain.
Down below and in the distance, they noted Rukia's movements, the young woman darting from corner to corner, glancing back over her shoulder again and again, as if in fear that she was being followed.
"Fleeing Shade Enclave?" Lady Avalier asked.
"The wall is the other way," Rial replied.
A peal of thunder shook the ground and the rain intensified. Lady Avalier had hit Rukia with a barrage of spells to confuse her, to block her memory, to suggest things were other than what they were. Still, she couldn't deny her surprise that Rukia, Caddybri, had found the wherewithal to leave her room, let alone the coven's compound.
"If she leaves Shade Enclave, bring her back in chains," Lady Avalier instructed. "And if she goes to the encampment of the Desai, do not let her. She is difficult to contain," Rial admitted.
Lady Avalier started to respond, but paused and nodded for Rial to look back at Rukia. The young woman rushed across a clearing and into a small storehouse, glancing around one last time before closing the door behind her.
"A curious choice," said Rial. "You know that building."
"Storage," Rial answered. "Oils and lanterns and torches, mostly. Is it possible that Rukia plans to search the sewers of Shade?" A tremendous bolt of lightning interrupted her and had both Rial and Lady Avalier falling back in surprise. The thunderous, stone-shaking retort following immediately, indeed almost instantly, because the bolt had struck only a short distance from the balcony on which they stood, and with such power that it jolted them into the air and both nearly tumbled down. They clutched at each other for balance, and both stared out from the balcony to the small storage building, which had been hit directly by the blast. Smaller explosions rocked the area, no doubt as casks of oil ignited, and flames leaped up against the driving rain.
"Rukia!"
Rial breathed. A final massive explosion shook the square, shook the entire section of Shade Enclave, and a huge fireball curled up from the storehouse like some fiery mushroom, lifting skyward to dissipate into steam and smoke. Below it lay the utterly destroyed building, a pile of smoldering debris sputtering in the driving rain. And Rukia did not come forth. Chapter 19. Godly Insight. The Year of the Ageless One, 1479, D.R., Mithril Hall. The torchlight flickered, casting wild shadows in the vast, empty chamber as the solitary figure made his way along the narrow bridge. A massive drop to his left and right only accentuated the loneliness of the scene. A single dwarf, walking hesitantly, his torch only barely chasing away the darkness. His steps slowed even more as he approached the central platform on this great bridge that spanned the chasm known as Garum's Gorge. His footsteps echoed, hard boots on stone. The shuddering torchlight showed that he was trembling. He paused at the front rim of the circular platform. Across from him, in the darkness, he heard the sound of water. Brunner's Falls, which marked the final run to the eastern gate of Mithril Hall. For Brunner, the return proved only bitter, not bittersweet. He had come this way with the caravan only a 10-day before, but hadn't slowed and hadn't even dared look at the podium on the northern side of this ceremonial platform. In his short